Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. It's that time again, and Pete is with me.
I am, yes.
James or Jim is with me.
Hello.
And Luke is here.
I was hoping for a last but not least there. All right.
And he's also with me. And also with you, listeners. Yeah. Gentlemen, Robbie Keane scored 4 goals on the weekend, got a 4-goal haul.
It's always called that, isn't it? Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is, James.
Yeah. Is it an official term, like hat-trick?
Or brace.
Ooh.
When do you do a haul? If you find, if you're in the Navy and you manage to get a load of cocaine off the boat.
You find loads of goals.
Yeah.
You have a cocaine haul.
Let's say over 3 goals is a haul. Mm. If it made it official.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not a Hall of Fame, of course.
There you go, lexicon.
Yeah.
What is your favourite 4-goal haul from the annals of time? James, you go first. Sorry, I got caught in a moment there. I was thinking about one I previously
You're
did.
You're taking a trip down memory lane.
I am going to go for when Thierry Henry just absolutely bullied Leeds Highbury and scored 4 in a night. I think he might even have had one disallowed. I'm not sure, but it was basically the same goal 4 times.
Did 4 goals count?
That was when Kilgallen was at the back for Leeds. He was like the next big thing, and he got
not after
roasted
to pieces. Yeah,
not
yeah.
after that.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah.
Luke, who have you got?
I'm going to go one better, if you don't mind, and I'm going to say Oleg Salenko when he obliterated the World Cup in 1994.
I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay,
wasn't 4 goals. It was
5. That's what I was going to go.
This is harsh. Oh. This is 4 goals.
Alan Shearer scored 5 against Ipswich once.
Okay. Then, thinking off the top of my head here, Yakubu Agbeni for Portsmouth against Middlesbrough when we beat them, I think 6-1. People might sort of pull me up on that, but he definitely got 4.
Yeah,
so I'm having that one.
Good.
But that, come on, let's have a bit of respect for Oleg Salenko. That was
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, he was joint top scorer in the 94 World Cup.
With 6.
He only played twice.
Yeah.
Closer got 5, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Miroslav Klose got 5 at one stage, and he was almost top scorer in similar.
That was in Saudi Arabia, was it? He got 5 when they beat them 8-0. Did he get 5, did he? Blimey. Pete.
I'm of course going to go for Andy. It's not my favourite. Andy Cole against Newcastle United for Manchester United.
Oh, yeah.
Scored 4.
Once.
Well, that leaves me with a few options. I've thought, James, you were going to go for Arshavin against Liverpool, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Bit recent.
Didn't we do anything else the entire game?
No.
Didn't do anything else the entire game.
It's not so
got 4 goals at Anfield.
And I've got very high standards, Marcus.
Okay. Well, I would choose myself, but it didn't happen. I'm going to go for Gary Lineker in a friendly for England against Spain. When England won 4-2, I think it was, and Gary got all 4.
It's a good haul.
He's a poacher.
He is a poacher.
He's a hall poacher.
Well, yeah.
Is he a hall monitor?
Tiptoe around that. Beardsley got 4 assists or something like that.
Did he?
Yeah.
A good partnership, that's why.
It was a wonderful partnership.
Marcus, you're a massive fan of the Beardsley-Lineker partnership, aren't you?
Of course.
Always have been.
Do you know why? Because I saw it.
Did you? In the flesh?
Not in the flesh.
All right.
On TV.
Sorry, quite a lot of other people know that.
Were you not?
Yeah, I probably do. I can't remember. Not what my memory's like.
Oh, very, very true. Well, can you remember what happened at the weekend?
Vaguely, yeah.
Well, let's talk about that then.
Being a Pompey fan, I don't necessarily want to remember what happened at the weekend.
I thought it wasn't a bad result for Portsmouth.
Well, it was a bad result because it was a defeat, and a defeat is always a bad result.
But it was only by 1 goal.
It was like, yeah.
That's really...
Is that the standards we set for ourselves? It was an okay performance, but I mean, you know, still a defeat.
Yeah, no, very true. I thought that one of the stand-up moments for me for the weekend was Arsenal's keeper.
Mm.
Young 21-year-old.
He used to be bad. I know he's young, yeah, but he used to be pretty
I said dodgy. A young 21-year-old as opposed to an old 21-year-old.
I'll tell you what, he's got a face on him.
That wheel.
His face looks like it's made of granite. It's got a massive honk on him as well. But let's not take anything away. I'll tell you what, he actually used his nose to stop one of the... Almost stop a goal, didn't
but he? But he got hit in the face and then did a sort of reaction. So, when he got hit with
But I thought, actually, he should have tipped that one round the post, not putting it back into play.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, but he made the recovery.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
You know, we learned from our failures.
He didn't know much about that. But it was a superb performance by him, and I think, you know, obviously, Craven Cottage is going to be a difficult place to go this season, and he was really the difference between them getting 3 points there and not, because Fulham had quite a few chances.
It's encouraging that Arsenal can sort of be battered like that and still come away with a win.
Absolutely, of course.
I think we can all be encouraged from that. I think that Van Persie... He is fantastic at when the ball kind of comes over or through to him.
Henri-esque, that was.
Taking a touch and then boom.
Yeah.
Do you remember that goal he scored, was it last year against Liverpool at the Emirates? I think it was like a contender for goal of the month or something.
Yeah, well, both goals he scored against Chelsea were similar as well.
Yeah, exactly.
One
was
miles offside. He can finish with his right foot.
Look at against Man City this season. It's a great goal.
That's a good point, Jimmy, because Marcus said that at the time as well, because we were watching it together, and that was his weaker foot as well.
Yeah, know, so. But he's great at that, and just that, if he gets that, you know, doesn't get that 100% right, that's not a goal.
No, yeah. Well, sometimes he quite often doesn't get it 100% right, and Robin Van Persie is a real good one for air shots, but it's worth the risk.
Yeah, he is, isn't it? Yeah.
Because when they come off, it's spectacular.
Oh, if he can just stay fit, he's absolutely massive. Yeah, he's one of the best players in the division.
He'd have 20 goals in a season, and we've said this before, but he's never had a whole season where he stayed fit, and let's just hope he can sort of get himself on track.
When his mate Adebayor's not grabbing all the goals, so we can maybe get a few.
He is grabbing them all just for City and not Arsenal.
When he's allowed on the pitch.
Yeah. I was going to say, Torres, hat trick. Beautiful.
Great hat trick.
Without being like.
Lineker-esque.
Yeah, without being.
Almost a haul.
No, almost a haul, yeah, exactly. It was a treble. Without being like England centric, and he is the best striker in the world for me.
That's not really been England centric.
Well, it is because he plays in England. You know what I mean? Okay. I don't want to be. Oh yeah, he's the best striker in the Premier League, so he must automatically be the best striker in the world. I mean that.
I personally still go for Eto'o, but obviously Torres has got some years on him, and he's a phenomenal player.
The second goal he scored for Liverpool, it was like he was taking the piss. He took it round the defender, took it on the keeper, waited for a little bit, and just put it on the outside of his right.
Yeah. And it was the fact that it was the outside of his right. Yeah.
Between two players on the line as well. Yeah. Just sort of like a flick. Oh, brilliant.
The goal he scored the week before, he had no right to score. There was never a goal on from there. Yeah. You know.
33 goals in 34 games at Anfield. It's not bad, is it?
That's outrageous.
That's unbelievable.
It's not bad, this league! Yeah. That's superb stuff, it really is.
Wigan beating Chelsea.
Again,
we're having that
Bramble. Convincingly as well.
I put Bramble on the bench for my
on the bench for
my fantasy league team.
I didn't say again because I beat him again. I was going to say again, a great performance.
But people were going, oh, it's a massive shock. Well, it was, but you can't forget that they did have Cech sent off.
They did,
yeah.
You know, and rightfully so, to the letter of the law. I mean,
nice to see Hilario back.
Hilario by name? No, he's not that bad.
Yeah, he kept a clean sheet at home against Barca, did he not, in the Champions League? Am I right?
Yeah,
he's obviously an experienced goalkeeper, isn't he?
But he's got a funny name, and I like the stereotype.
That's right.
In foreigners, isn't there funny names?
It has to be said that it's a shock result, Marcus, because
of course it is.
Because Wigan have been so poor against big teams up until then. That's the first time they've beaten the top four side.
And they've had a patchy start this season as well.
Is that the first time they've beaten top four?
It's the first time they've beaten a top four side in about 34 attempts or something.
Yeah, okay, right.
Yeah, so you got. I mean, Roddy Agar's a superb player. Mm. Yeah, he really is a difference for them. And he's going to be if he can carry on playing the way he's playing, he's going to be a difference whether they have a decent season and a sort of a bit of a shaky, dodgy one.
They really do have the scouting network just spot on, don't they? They keep unearthing players like this. I mean, like Palacios as well.
Do you think that's Bruce? I think that's Steve Bruce. As much as I hated to give him credit, I think it is Steve Bruce who does that.
Yeah, I think he did put that in place.
And he's done well at Sunderland as well, Bruce, since he's been there.
Yeah, I mean, okay, they were 2-0 up against Wolves, it was 2-2, but 5-2, they've hammered them, really.
Yeah.
Wolves must... I mean, if you're a Wolves fan, because they got themselves back in the game. They hauled themselves back in the game. from nowhere, and then obviously the quality of Sunderland's strike put force come to bed.
At times, Wolves were superb against Fulham the other week. Like, I think they're giving a fairly decent account of themselves. They've got a couple of wins under their belt. It's going to be tough.
They'll beat Portsmouth.
I enjoyed that little back pass free kick they had to do inside the
box. That was class.
That was brilliant. I love that.
Yeah, they hardly ever scored. Last goal I've seen scored like that was for England.
Oh, Shearer.
Shearer and Sheringham on there.
Yeah. Shearer just thundered the thing into the roof of the net.
But that was lucky, that one they scored, because it could have gone anywhere, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Man United, good a win.
Good a win.
Good a win. Away to Stoke. Ryan Giggs.
2 assists again.
Mate, you're loving that.
Yeah. I'm loving Ryan Giggs. I mean, I hardly fancy the pants off him.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
But, yeah. Is it Larry Tors doing the work?
Are we going to talk about big results? Are we going to talk about Newcastle's result?
Well, we are. Yeah, we can move straight onto that if you so desire.
Sending Roy Keane to DEFCON 2 / 5 o'clock shadow. Yeah, once it goes full beard, DEFCON 5, get the fuck out of town. He's going to explode. He's going to explode like Ahmadinejad, the Iranian prisoner.
He does look like Ahmadinejad when he grows up.
He's showing signs of cracking up, though, isn't he? He's saying things like, well, yeah, maybe I'm just being found out. But, yeah, I've got to bring something to the team. At the moment, I'm bringing nothing to this team.
So,
you're Roy Keane.
He actually said that, didn't he? He said every place in football I've been up until now, I've thought to think I've brought something to the club. I've brought nothing to Ipswich. You're still there. A little bit of stuff.
Yeah, you're not writing an autobiography. A little bit of that could go a long way with Paul Ince, I think.
He's caught whatever Sol Campbell's got.
Mentalitis. It's like, my favourite quotes from the weekend was like, oh, it might be the weekend before actually, Keane sort of saying, I will allow a mistake, but not when it's made more than once.
Yeah, is that right? Yeah. One of those weird things was because I was watching that on the Football League Show, the more and more bizarre Football League Show.
It's like Blue Peter. That's weird.
Blue Peter crossed with Crime Watch.
Crossed with Oz, the TV show.
But when that guy does it, well, I forget his name.
Manish.
Yes, when he does his links and all, he's always walking.
Yeah, yeah.
Never bloody stays.
Why is Jackie Oatley in like an operations room?
Yeah, I know. And why they give her?
Here I am monitoring the goals.
Yeah. but they give her things to say, like Dave from Newcastle says, "Up the Magpies."
The setup is very much like 24. I think the CTU in the
setup. Yeah, it's like
I keep on expecting to come.
Yeah, and seeing photo fits of players on the wall. So. But one of the weird things, so watching it on that show was like. My brain couldn't compute that my eyes were seeing a Kevin Nolan hat-trick. It's like, what's happened? The world's gone crazy.
Another near four-goal haul.
Exactly.
Can we call hat-tricks that? A near four-goal haul?
They're hat-tricks or trebles.
A near haul.
A near haul.
He's taking the game ball home because he's got a near haul.
And two goals would be a half haul.
Yeah.
I think it's an idea myself. Pete, Newcastle, 4-0.
Well, you know... I think no. I think we got found out against Blackpool a little bit. I think we got found out against... I forget how we played in the League Cup, but we certainly got knocked out, I know that. Our squad's very, very thin and we can't play... we can't put kids out against the weaker teams. So I think if we're not very lucky with injuries, and to be honest, weirdly enough, Diego Maradona's helped us because he's not called up Colaccini or Jonas Gutierrez. He's only for the friendly that's I think next week, a couple of weeks.
It's absolutely incredible that statement made sense.
but the fact that he's only choosing home people that are located in Argentina.
Yeah, and they're like 35.
Well, actually, I was talking to Rupert, southamericanfootball.co.uk, and he was saying that for these friendlies, sometimes they for the ones in between the European fixtures, they have a deal with the European clubs that they won't pick European-based players. Okay. And so that is a side full
of... Yeah, but he's been doing that anyway, though, not just in friendlies.
Well, that particular friendly, I think it's against Ghana. He's just picked players who play in the Argentinian leagues, and Ariel Ortega's one of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
But at the age of 35, getting a recall.
Ariel 35, 36? Ariel Ortega's had to go on loan to a club that's closest to his rehab centre.
Well, this is it. He is still in rehab. You know, it's unbelievable that he's been recalled.
But surely the point of him picking only a sort of home-based side for friendlies is to sort of blood players from the Argentinian league, and just filling it in with Ortega. Surely Ortega's not going to get a shot for the World Cup squad. It doesn't make any sense.
No, well, that's it's
strange.
This is Maradona,
well, especially when he's not picking people like Cambiaso regularly.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, that's
Higuain.
Well, Rupert was telling me
I'm not letting this go.
But Higuain actually, there's questions about his patriotism, which I think we mentioned last time or certainly before, because he was born in France and one thing or another. But apparently, he does not get on well at all with Heinze and Gago.
Gago.
Yeah. And Maradona loves those players, apart from Heinze's rubbish. And Gago's not much... Gago's all right, he's all right. But Maradona's put Mascherano and Gago as key in his midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
puts Heinze back there, because actually Heinze does have a lot of experience, as we all know, which, you know, I mean, he's called up a 36-year-old uncapped player, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I forget his name, but... But I think he thinks to himself, well, Higuain also didn't play in the under-20 World Cup once upon a time, and he shunned it. That wasn't when Maradona was in charge. And Maradona was very, very angry at
that.
That's
a big deal in Argentina.
Well, it is a big deal in Argentina. I mean, well, look at David Bentley when he didn't want to play in the under-21 European Championships, was it? You know, he got a lot of score.
Yeah, but Higuain's still decent.
Yeah.
Just look at David Bentley.
Yeah, okay, exactly. Maybe not, but you see what I mean. So I think that's why he doesn't get on well with those players, and there's a bit of politics. And Maradona is all about he's such a patriot.
He's a terrible man manager.
He's a terrible man.
And a terrible manager.
But I'd love to meet him.
I think they should just get like a flag in charge, because it seems to be he's driven by patriotism. Yeah. So just get a flag.
Just hang it up on the wall. Just put a team on it.
Yeah, just get the president to.
But look at the way
they'll have them painting the flag on their faces.
Yeah, while they're playing.
But look at the way he plays. For a player who played such wonderful football, he loves the blood, guts and the gore, doesn't he?
Well, so I've read people...
Riquelme's not in that side.
Riquelme's not in that side because something you touched on earlier, which is that he made Mascherano his main man and captain, and Riquelme being the character he has got put out by that. But I've read people say that people like Jorge Valdano, who's like a really thinking man's footballer and, you know, intelligent man, saying that people don't realise that Maradona was quite a tactically astute player.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem to be a tactically astute manager. He takes England three lines patriotism in an Argentinian way to the ultimate extreme. It'd be like having Ian Wright in charge of England.
Yeah. but that's it, though. It's weird, isn't it, that his playing style and his managerial style are two totally different things. I mean, look at a man like Stuart Pearce. Again, blood, guts and gore and all the rest of it. But he's not quite like that at manager level, you know.
But it's so often the case that what the player is like as a footballer just bears no relation to them as a manager. It's pretty much always the case, to be fair. There's not many players that have been great players that have gone on to win big things. I mean, Guardiola, Beckenbauer, but really... really thin on
but
the ground.
The other one is Diego Milito. Now, has he scored 5 in 5 for Inter?
He's had a good start.
But the thing is with him is that he didn't play well in Argentina when he was playing there. And then he went to Europe, and so they never really saw him too much. And so in Argentina, he's not got a very good reputation.
Whereas the manager's got to go beyond that, though.
Well, of course he does, but this is Maradona with him, So why Milito's not playing, I don't know.
Well, I hope they go there. We can't have a World Cup without having Messi. Because Cristiano Ronaldo's probably not going to be there. So it'd be a shame if those two don't go. I mean,
We've said this.
Yeah, yeah.
In Italy, Inter Milan have lost the game to Sampdoria, and there's Del Neri Sampdoria, and someone suggested that Jose Mourinho's a kind of bogeyman, if you like, was Del Neri, and Mourinho responded by saying, "My only bogeyman is my assistant coach, no one else." whatever that means. Yeah. If I remember correctly, Del Neri replaced me at Porto and was sacked 15 days after his appointment. Yesterday he won, tomorrow he will lose, the day after that he will draw. Also, last season he lost...
Nostradamus?
Well, he's maybe got a sports almanac.
Is he? Yeah.
Also, last season he lost with Atalanta at the San Siro against us after winning at home. Today we lost, that's football. And then Del Neri responded by saying, well, if he said that, he should have kept his mouth shut. We won with merit against the great side. We did it with a lot of running, but also with a lot of quality. I love all that. I really do.
When he says his assistant coach is his bogeyman, maybe it means he gets him to pick his nose for him. I imagine Jose really does get what he wants. Man, that's why.
Steve Clark wasn't going to do that.
I think Mourinho's probably been a little bit unfair. Sampdoria have had a good start of the season.
Sampdoria have had a superb start.
That's not strictly true what he says about Del Neri. Didn't Del Neri want to go back to Italy because he couldn't settle in Portugal?
Yeah.
I think it wasn't as cut and dried as that. So
you know what Mourinho's like? Someone says, have you got a little chink in your arm?
Sometimes I think I love Mourinho as much as the next man, but I sometimes wonder if he's like a little bit insecure.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, he's definitely got a little bit about him, do you know what I mean? He can't resist it.
He's a bully.
He is, isn't he? Yeah, he is. But we love all the knee slides and that sort of stuff. So
absolutely. Yeah. Also in Italy, Fiorentina, Adrian Mutu seems to be suffering quite a lot, as you would fully expect from Chelsea
horrible.
Effectively going out to ruin him.
I saw the game against at Livorno this week, and... he missed quite a few chances. Fiorentina, they won the game 1-0, but they should have won it a lot easier. But he looked a bit of a shadow, really. I mean, I hope that's not the reason, because that's not nice to see. No. Maybe he just had an off day. In fairness, I haven't seen him enough this season, but he didn't look as good as I remembered him, and I hope that's not the reason why.
Well, it can surely can only be negatively impacting him. Isn't the case that if he can't pay this fine by the end of the year, then he's banned from playing? in any league.
It's something.
He's got to take it. I mean, he can take it to a higher court. I mean, he's got to do that. He has to do that.
I think he's probably scared too, because last time he went to FIFA, they increased it.
Yeah, but I think he can go to the court of arbitration for sport, which is higher, much higher. So that, and it's nothing to do with FIFA. So hopefully he'll be able to sort it out and be sensible about it. You know, I mean, there's no sense finding someone that amount of money anyway, an individual person. Like Warren Buffett or something.
The International Players Union have pledged support to him, saying that they've actually gone in with saying he was discriminated against the grounds of his nationality, which I don't know if they're on dangerous territory or whatever there, but that's certainly something they're saying. And they suggested that had the same offence been committed by a player with a British passport, then they wouldn't have had all that kind of stuff.
I don't know about that.
I think that's grabbing at straws.
Yeah.
It seems like the wrong straw to grab at.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter.
If you sort of put your briefcase down and went, that's mental, Your Honour. But if you look at, we've probably talked about it before, but I mean, just recently, Kenya managed to pay off one of their fines that meant they were allowed to play another World Cup qualifier. Where people had been chucking stuff on the pitch. They were charged about, I think, £6,000 or something by FIFA. The Ivory Coast that managed to, due to the overcrowding in one of their games, obviously, early in the year, 20 people died.
Yeah.
They, FIFA, fined them something like £40,000, but then...
That's 20 deaths.
Not only that, they charged them, they fined them £40,000 and then gave them £68,000 to give to the families of the recently deceased, which so they've made a profit out of it almost that they should be forking out their own.
Stop doing it wrong
by killing and maiming a lot of people.
We've often said that, haven't we? I mean, we actually did a show and it was entitled, I think, by James, "Kick Arbitrary Fines Out of Football." They've got it all wrong. They've got it all wrong. Yeah.
There's just no sort of logic to.
Yeah.
There's no sort of sliding scale of what's bad. It's like they just decide over lunch, like, how are we feeling today? Well, yeah, 600 quid.
We've said it before, and it's worth saying again. Look, the two Real Madrid fines, the one. Well, it was the Spanish FA, wasn't it?
For the
racism against the English players, was how much?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's so ridiculous.
Like 25 euros or something.
it was
4,000.
Not far off that, yeah.
It was really small.
And Real Madrid, they were fined for watering their pitch. Is that right, Luke?
Yeah, they were fined. How many hundreds of thousands?
I think it was about 350,000.
For
euros.
Watering.
Considerably more than racism. Yeah.
The overall point stands.
But it's genuinely almost heartbreaking when Mutu's sort of saying, I'm a different player now. I'm a different human being now. I'm remarried. I've got two kids. I'm looking after them. And he's a completely different human being now.
He's even said, "Can't we do something? Bring charity into this?"
Well, yeah. I think that's just him being a little bit smart. Because at the end of the day, Chelsea is sort of saying it's not about the money when it clearly bloody is.
They shouldn't have sacked him and just washed their hands of him so quickly.
We've been through this. He's absolutely right. They wanted to get rid of him, and they used this as a tool to do that. And the fact that they're still pursuing this now is utterly abhorrent.
It just smacks of a personal vendetta against him from someone within the club. Mm. It's outrageous. It's really so unfair.
There was talk that he didn't get on with a lot of people. He was a bit of a partier, wasn't he?
Apparently so.
Evidently, yeah.
Last Saturday, as people may have seen on the Twitter and the Facebook and all, and the website, we played our first 11-a-side match, the Football Ramble and Friends.
Mm-hmm. We had to get some ringers in, didn't we? Because only four of us.
Well, and friends.
Yeah, exactly.
And we played Pete, your team, Perfidious Albion. Pete, you played for us.
My Sunday league team, yeah.
And we won 3-2.
We did, yeah. I was genuinely surprised because we've never played an 11-a-side match.
Yeah, it was all right, wasn't it?
I mean, they had 10 men, but still, we had Luke in goal, who's never played in 11-a-side before. 11-a-side goals.
Yeah, well, not for about 8 years, and that was only once. So I think we can get away with saying that,
And I think it's worth saying that none of us knew. I certainly didn't know, and I think most of the team didn't know that we were playing against 10 men until the very end.
Why didn't
we attack more? What did you do?
But I mean, we'd never played together before, really, and especially not 11-a-side, so it was a good achievement. And also, boys, the weather was
a good achievement.
Very hot weather as well.
I was sunburnt.
Yeah, were you? Yeah, in September, eh?
Same for both sides.
Yeah, true, that's true, yeah.
Thanks to Perfidious Albion. Yeah. And hopefully we'll be able to play them again.
Jewel afternoon. Anyway, we better say it was 3-2.
Well, I did say that.
Did you?
Yeah. If you want to ram the point home.
Yeah, I do, I think it's important. It's a 5-goal thriller.
Who scored, Marcus?
I got one.
Rupert from South American Football got a penalty, didn't he?
He did. And then and Chris popped up with a winner.
That's Chris Gore, I think his name is.
Why not?
Yeah, I think
sounds a bit like Hall.
I pushed him out from centre back to left midfield.
You're not taking any credit for any of the goals.
He got the winner, so
I set it up.
True, yeah.
Luke,
you were a speck on the horizon.
A very large fat speck.
Luke did a really, really good reaction save.
Oh, you did?
Shea Given-esque, which is very good.
It's a save I didn't realise I'd done until it had happened.
But then he did consequently get lobbed.
I didn't get. It wasn't a lob. He said that on purpose. You see his face? He's actually really mean. It wasn't a lob. My positioning was poor. But it went in the bottom corner. It wasn't a lob. I'm 6'3", I don't get lobbed.
Right.
Simple as that. Like Pete says on my gravestone, it's going to say, never knowingly lobbed. Emails.
He's not lying.
I should have gone, right!
Well, James did that when you weren't here, I think.
Oh, did you? Fair
original.
Oh, wait, we're on the same wavelength, that's why. I'll go first one, Marcus.
Please do.
I've got an email, it's a rather serious one, but I think it's a point worth addressing and something to make everyone aware of. It's from a guy called Tom Fern, who is a Hyde United fan. Now, Hyde are in the Conference North for now, obviously one division below the Blue Square Premier.
Yep.
And they've recently sort of pretty much been wound up and ceased to exist as a club because of an unpaid tax bill, which was left by a benevolent sugar daddy who just up sticks and left. So they're trying to raise some cash. Now, they need to find £35,000 by this Friday. So lots of all sorts of fundraising things going on this week. It's a bit of a sad state of affairs, given in that part of the world,
dreadful stuff
around Manchester, there's also an awful lot of money knocking about, and especially as, didn't Gary Neville do a piece in the paper recently saying, we're worth every penny and that sort of stuff, which, you know, is a different issue, and I'm not going to go down that sort of slippery slope, but, you know, it's only £35,000, which in the world of football isn't a massive amount of cash, but it is a lot of money to sort of the average attendance at Hyde, which is only about 500 or 600, so I don't personally like the idea of sort of 600 or so kids growing up and not having a team to support.
Well,
so, yeah, absolutely. So the website to go to is www.eyeonthetigers.co.uk. So that's EYE on thetigers.co.uk. And there's all sorts of information there. And if you haven't got any money, then fine, but it's good to raise awareness and maybe pass it on to someone who might have. And yeah, even a tenner or five or whatever. Hopefully they can sort of re-enter the league next season and carry on playing football.
Absolutely.
And if you think about it, it's cheaper than helping Adrian Mutu. So
exactly.
Well, yeah. if you've got one cause to choose,
that would be the more realistic.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to them, and let us know how it gets on.
Yeah, do keep us posted. But I mean, by this Friday, so this show will be out on Wednesday. They're doing some stuff at the City of Manchester Stadium this week, but that's going to be a bit outdated by the time this gets released. So, yeah, go on to that eye on the tigers.co.uk and see if there's anything you can do.
James. You've got the next email.
I do have the next email. This is in response to something from last week. This is from a guy called Faisal bin Jamil. Ramble Force? He's done it with a question there. I like that.
Yeah.
I was just listening to your podcast and I want a shout of being the most devoted listener to your show in an obscure region as I'm from Jordan.
Oh. So,
I mean, he's in with a good shout there.
Is Lord Ramble in Jordan?
He is at the moment.
He is, yes. We've got a mysterious, shadowy fifth member that you never see. He's sort of like the mum on Tom and Jerry.
Thomas Lukey!
The housekeeper, I mean. Okay, I also heard you say that the Premier League's official reason for players being booked when they take their shirt off is because it's offensive to Muslims. That is just retarded. Players don't get booked in the Asian Cup nor the Jordanian League for doing that. It's a daily occurrence over here in any game, international or local. Also, I want to speak. Also, I want to speak for the entire Muslim population when I say that we see a lot of things on TV that come from the West that are essentially different to our views, and we accept this, and it's essentially why we watch them. I can think of 1,000 things on TV that are far more offensive than a player taking off his shirt in jubilation of scoring.
Name them.
Peter Andre and Jordan can have a whole segment in the news about their divorce. Then I think a striker should be allowed to take their shirt off when they score. P.S. Don't need a P.S. in an email, Faisal. I've pointed this out before, but I'll let you off. Yes, I do hate Jordan for naming herself after my country. What a tart.
Well, right. It's Katie Price now, so the joke's on him.
What a tart. But right, this is interesting because it was actually Jeff Winter who told us this, isn't it? Because as we've said, you can email Jeff Winter and he replies. It's great. Right, so we've got another email which has actually been a response.
Jeff Winter sort of strikes me as the person, sort of person who wouldn't say, I don't know.
Yeah,
he just
absolutely.
Makes something up, which is clearly what he's done.
Bloody Muslims want to ban Christmas, didn't they? Blame it on them. so we've got another one. Actually, this is in response to Simon Lyre's email, which was actually mentioning this last week. This is from a guy called Steve.
Oh, the guy took his shirt off in the game.
Yes, yeah. This is a guy called Steve from Ottawa in Canada. I am a certified referee.
That's the capital.
Right. You heard it here first. Well, they never. I have not.
being the educated bunch that the Ramblers are. Yeah,
Canada is the capital of Canada. I'm a certified referee, and Mr. Light is wrong. The reason players are booked for removing their shirt is listed under law for the player's equipment. It is a yellow card offence to remove any required equipment. So if Mr. Light had celebrated his goal by removing his boots or shin pads, he would have been yellow carded just the same. Mr. Light should have been yellow carded when he removed the shirt during normal play without scoring a goal. Remember when Mad Jens took the player's boot and put it on top of the goal?
Yes,
the player scrambled to get it back, knowing he would be booked for not having the required equipment on. Love the show, Steve from Ottawa. I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah, I think the player thought that's a vital piece of equipment. Yeah. And also,
Jens is coming for me ankles.
If you take the one shin pad off, is that a book? And you take your boot off, that's a sending off. Yeah. Is it a yellow card per piece of equipment?
Yeah. Ketz Bayer was lucky that rule wasn't in place back then, wasn't he? When he took all his clothes off,
I don't think the referee wanted to do anything to him. He was like, you could get on with it.
What about Claudio Caniggia when he got butchered by the Cameroonians? He had his boot removed and he carried on.
It's quite a new thing, though, isn't it?
Got booked for being cynically taken down at one of the worst tackles I've ever seen, that would be ridiculous, Luke.
What if when you hurt your head and you get put a bandage on, do you get like a yellow card rescinded? Because that's an extra bit of equipment.
True, yeah. But the thing is, though, Steve, I mean, thanks for emailing in and stuff, and you know, that's all great, but it's a bit boring, isn't it?
Leave off!
No! Come on!
Get off! Where's your emails, then?
How'd you leave Steve alone?
Sorry.
You hectoring boor.
Yeah, I'm only doing it because he's got no right to reply. I'm a big bully.
Email fascist.
I look after the email, so even if the email's back, I've just bin it. I'm only joking, Steve. It's a fine email. I'm only joking.
Pete.
I'm just shocked, to be honest.
Provide some sanity, as you often do.
Oh, yes! This is from a young man by the name of Casey Early.
Casey Early?
I said
yes.
Sanity.
Well, I know a Mr. Early who used to be my English teacher. Casey's a fine first name, so yeah.
Yeah, fine. Yeah.
Casey in the Sunshine Band or whatever they are. Yeah. Cool.
He's a Spurs fan, apparently, but this has no bearing on the story
at all.
That's
the way he likes
it. Keep up the good work, lads. Love listening to the show. My sight at the work, although I get a few looks when I speed past people cackling to myself. Look at me, I'm on a bike! A couple of my uni mates and I went to see the riveting 2-2 draw between Sweden and Japan in the Umbro Cup at the City Ground Nottingham in 1995. Ooh. After the game, which had none other than Pelé as a spectator, we went round to the players' entrance to see if we could get anyone's autograph or see a famous person. Perhaps unsurprisingly, we didn't have to fight our way to the front, although loopy Swedish keeper Ravelli would have been a cat.
Thomas Ravelli, he was a legend.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he didn't get him. But we waited for a bit, and then out shuffled the twinkly-eyed Bert Millichip clutching what appeared to be a lot of presents. Like he'd found a room where there's loads for orphans and he stole them.
Yeah.
Next up was the sour-faced chief executive himself, Graham Kelly.
I'm Graham Kelly.
Graham Kelly.
Please release the balls.
Seizing my chance, I leaned forward with my ticket and asked, autograph, Mr. Kelly? He frowned but obliged, and as he was writing, I thought I'd get the banter going. Looking good on the old FA Cup draw, Mr. Kelly, I said. He just scowled. It gets better every year, came the monotone reply. Yeah. He handed back the ticket and walked on. We looked at the ticket, and to our astonishment, we realised that he had signed a name, crossed out, and then correctly signed his own name. The original name that he wrote was Roy Hodgson.
What? How'd you forget who you are? He was in charge of the whole Football Association at one stage. He doesn't even know who he is. Give it to Gascoigne.
Give it to Frank Clark.
Yeah.
To this day, we can only speculate why he did this. Alcohol, schizophrenia, or maybe just a little gag.
All of the above.
Mr. Kelly, if you are listening to the Football Ramble, and I'm pretty sure that he is, personally, please spill the beans.
Yeah.
You please, mental hype.
Really, please
nut.
Do, yeah. How have you got to that position of power? Really? Mind you, hi, Graham Taylor, so...
Mike Ashley made £1 billion. Nothing makes sense.
Steve McLaren managed England.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Diego Maradona's in charge of Argentina. We could go on.
We've got a podcast that people actually listen to. We're probably about to add to that list.
Booyah.
That's a great email. Cracking.
Yeah.
I think it was like when Paul McCartney died in the 70s. Yeah. And he's been replaced. 60s. Was it 60s where he died and then he was replaced? Yeah. I think he was actually Roy Hodgson. There's a fake Roy Hodgson.
Is that right?
The original Beatles are all giant shape-shifting paedophile lizards from space anyway.
Well,
having said that, have you ever seen Graham Kelly and Roy Hodgson in the same place at the same time?
Exactly.
I think about that.
Yeah, and when you do see that in a sitcom, when they come back and pretend pretend to be the auntie or the mother. Hello, you put a high voice on, don't you?
Yeah, like Graham Kelly, Mrs. Hello. Doubtfire. Yeah. Exactly, classic example.
Oh, hello, children, release the balls.
It can only be true.
Yeah, Marcus, do you want to inject some sanity into the proceeding?
Yeah, that's what I asked you for, Pete. Oh, dear, you big disappointer. Buongiorno, Rambolinos. Whilst listening...
Is this from Alan Partridge?
I hope not. Not again. Whilst listening to a few podcasts from last season, I was reminded of the discussion about getting the ball in the crowd. I'm 23 and I have sat in the same seat at Celtic Park for 13 years. The recent Celtic v Hearts match, there's a young lad who sits next to me, 8 years old, and he was given the honour, it was his birthday, and he was given the honour of having his birthday message and photo displayed on one of the big screens.
Cracking.
So before the game and at half-time, he made sure I was looking, and this led me to asking for his autograph, which he was delighted with. Yeah. Midway through a frustrating second half, the Hearts keeper cleared the ball high into the air, and as the ball plummeted towards me, I knew it was destiny. I caught the ball like Paolo Di Canio in the most sporting act in history, paused for a moment to experience the quality and the fragrance of a genuine match ball, then threw it back to Danny Fox, who didn't say thanks.
Oh.
Back slapping commenced, and I felt that one of my goals in life could be ticked from the list. Then I turned to the lad beside me. The look on his face made me realise I'd denied an 8-year-old boy one of the best birthday weekend Monday playground braggings in history.
Oh, that is poor.
Then I thought of how Michael Owen was feeling when he scored past the 13-year-old goalie, and also that the fact that the boy will never watch John Barnes manage Celtic, and I knew I'd made the right decision. Keep up the good ramblers. Oh, that's from Dan Brown.
Superb.
Cracky, well done, Dan. Not the Dan Brown, I hope.
I don't think so.
No, he's
Scottish, so he's Dan Brun.
It's quite well written as well, so probably not. Political and literature and that.
Did you see that clip on the YouTube about where there was this baseball game where the ball gets hit into the stands?
Oh, the kid catches it?
And the dad caught it and went, yeah, and everyone's gone, woo, because you get to keep them, as a souvenir.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he hands it to his little daughter and his daughter just throws it back.
Oh.
So he loses the little souvenir. Yeah,
that's class.
So, who are we going to give the champ manager goodie bag to?
I think it's got to be KC, the man who uncovered Graham Kelly for being Roy Hodgson in disguise.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Yeah. Championship manager goodie bag is on its way to you, my good man. funny stories! it is funny stories. Who's got one, James or Pete?
Shall I go first?
Go on, old sport.
All right, then I will. this is about the very popular story about the Danish goalkeeper. We've had a lot of people tweeting and people emailing in asking what we
think about
asking
it.
About what we think about it.
Thanks, a great idea.
If you like.
A goalkeeper in Sweden's top football league may be suspended and perhaps fined after he was caught moving the goalposts. Quite literally.
Literally moving the goalposts.
Kim Christiansen, a Dane who plies his trade with IFK Gothenburg, was seen on camera kicking in both sides of the goal frame to reduce the target area ever so slightly at the start of a crucial match in the first division.
Swedish first division, yeah.
The game between IFK and Örebro was shown live on national television, but it took the referee more than 20 minutes to spot that the posts were a few centimetres inside the guidelines marked on the pitch. He moved them back out to their correct positions, but because he was unaware that the goalkeeper was responsible, he couldn't take any further action. I mean, why would you?
It was an AstroTurf pitch, wasn't it? That's how he did it.
Yeah.
3G. Yeah.
And he said Christensen admitted it. Faced with clear television editing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's because he blazed
And he said that, I got the tip from a goalkeeping friend a few years ago, and since then I have done it from time to time.
That's not a tip, that's cheating.
I love this attitude that if you don't get caught, it's just fine.
Yeah. I received a tip from a goalkeeping friend to bring a knife so he could stab the ball.
Make the goal smaller isn't a tip. That's cheating.
But like you say, James, it's almost like, well, I've done it before.
Yeah, I've always got away with it then.
Well, it's our mistake.
Hey, yeah. I've done loads of murders.
Bloody why Ibrahimovic now? Arrested me once in the red light district.
I once caught a guy when I was on the train who got fined for not having a ticket. And he said to the train guard, well, the thing is, I've done this so many times, it don't matter how much you fine me, I'm still going to be up. And the guy was like, right, maximum fine. Yeah, why say that in that situation? You know, don't say that to him.
Going back to the Scandinavian football thing, whenever I watch Scandinavian football, it looks really good fun.
Yeah.
I'd love to play in Scandinavia. I really would. It's not me trying to tout myself. I'm committing to the ramble.
Yeah, good. Scandinavian leagues for the population you have there are massively supported, really well supported.
But no, it just looks like really good, real good, you know, played in the right spirit.
Good crack.
Apart from that clip I saw recently when that
when the guy's moving the goalpost.
No, well, yeah, but it's all banter, isn't it?
It's true, yeah.
Like that one bloke who absolutely pulverised that player off the off
oh,
the
yeah,
ball.
He's broke his leg, yeah.
Yeah, that's not very nice.
Yeah, but, you know, you can't say that represents the entire Swedish league, can
definitely
you?
No, and I'm not going to say that. No. But I'd love to play there. Gothenburg.
Stop issuing a come-and-get-me plea on the ramble. The transfer window's shut, anyway.
Get a Twitter account, like Darren Bent.
DB10, the truth.
James, you've got a funny story us all and the Ramblers.
OK. QPR supporters could be forgiven for not remembering their derby match against Crystal Palace on April the 4th this year. This is from the Sunday Telegraph. It was a turgid, goalless draw, and yet, unbeknown to those in the stands at Loftus Road, something extraordinary was happening as midfielder Lee Cook came on for the home side at half-time to replace Liam Miller. Telegraph Sport can disclose that the substitution was made on the direct orders of Flavio Briatore, the QPR chairman and co-owner, working 6,500 miles away at the Malaysian Grand Prix in Kuala Lumpur. Sources close to the West London club have confirmed that the disgraced former Renault team principal, unimpressed by the footage he had seen of Miller's first half performance, contacted Paulo Sousa, the then team manager, to demand that the 28-year-old be replaced by Cook. It would be neither the first time nor the last that Briatore exercised such a remarkable degree of control over selection decisions at QPR. Gareth Ainsworth, a stalwart QPR player who has also spent two spells as caretaker manager, had an equally memorable brush with the Briatore treatment. Ainsworth was in charge for the club's fourth-round Carling Cup match at Manchester United on the 11th of November, and in sodden conditions decided to leave his mobile phone in the dressing room in his jacket pocket. After a 1-0 defeat, he returned to find 72 missed calls from Briatore.
Bloody hell.
That's mental, because Briatore is actually mad in Formula One. He's just been banned for life, hasn't he?
Yeah.
For all sorts of funny
things. Ringing the drivers while they're on the trip.
Yeah. We'll put your hands free on then. That is absolutely nuts. He looks like a sinister one. He's got those blue glasses. I don't want to say anymore in case he has me killed.
He's the women you see him with, you just think, Bond villain.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely. When he was making those 72 minutes calls, presumably it was a May not ago, so he would have been there. Mm. Was he in the crowd, like, stroking a cat? Like, ringing him?
Did he leave a message?
Yeah, we don't know.
Hello, but yeah, it's the chairman of QPR here.
Steve Claridge.
And Graham Kelly. Maybe you left your phone somewhere. Sorry.
Give me a call back.
Maybe you'll try to call me or something.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's profile time, and the profile this week is on the Cup Winners' Cup.
Oh, hey. We've often threatened that.
Mm. Well,
I believe
you know,
pulled it out.
Well,
Martin.
The boys in the Hall of Fame need something to play for.
That's very true. Barry Davis needs a big trophy to commentate on.
At the moment, they haven't even got a stadium at the moment.
Well,
they?
All
they're
good
around
time.
In the ether.
Ooh, don't open the curtain too far.
Yeah.
Okay. The Cup Winners' Cup, it began in 1960. 7 years before the Summer of Love.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, I shouldn't have to do
that. I missed that, sorry.
It won the smelting race.
Hey!
I'd say so, yeah, that's good. That's good, definitely.
Marvellous. Definitely. Marvellous. You wouldn't drink out of that cup, let me tell you. Yes, the Cup Winners' Cup, it was a football club competition, which happened every year, and it was contested by the most recent winners of all the European domestic cup competitions, so the FA Cup.
Would our younger listeners remember it, Marcus?
Well, it finished in the late 90s, so yeah. It depended. Kevin from Fife might not have heard
it.
Who's a real feature on this show all of a sudden?
That's well boring, Marcus.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pete. Kevin. It had a 39-year history, and it was a straight knockout tournament with a two-legged home and away ties until the single match in the final, which was staged at a neutral venue, of course. Well, the only exception was that it was when in the first year of the competition it was a two-legged affair. But as I say, the other 38 years it was one-legged, a one-off final in a neutral venue.
I'm not a fan of a two-legged final.
No, I'm not. I like the neutral venue.
Yeah, I do.
Neutral venue, absolutely. And it was 32 teams with four knockout rounds prior to the showpiece final. It was one club from each UEFA member association.
Just
one
a cup winner, just a cup winner. That's
one
it.
Cup.
Hence the name, isn't it?
Exactly, from each country. However, if, for example, if I don't know, Manchester United won the FA Cup and the league, then it would be the finalist.
Yes, it would
of the competition. Would get in there, and if the finalists came second, then it would kind of go down the league. Yeah. So that's how it would kind of work there. The first competition was held in 1960 to 1961. Anybody name the two finalists?
Oh, that, Spurs?
No.
No.
1960.
Close. Spurs were involved.
Spurs, yeah.
It was Fiorentina versus Rangers.
Oh, was it?
Oh.
Yeah, Fiorentina won. 4-1 on aggregate. And the last one was 1998-1999. Finalists, anybody know?
That was at Villa
Chelsea?
Park.
It was at Villa Park.
Yeah, and it was
Chelsea. Okay. Chelsea were...
It was at Villa
one.
Park, and it was it was Fiorentina again?
No.
No, it was Lazio.
It was Lazio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And...
Oh. Mallorca.
Ryan Mallorca. Okay, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, and the cup was abolished in 98-99 to make way for a bigger expansion to the Champions League, which of course we have now, and then in the UEFA Cup, which is now the Europa League,
League, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
And all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But prior to all that, the Cup Winners' Cup was actually regarded as the second most prestigious European club competition.
See, now, yeah, because I remember it having quite a lot of.
It was better than the UEFA Cup.
It was better than the UEFA Cup because you had the European Cup, which obviously became the Champions League. Yeah. You had the Cup Winners' Cup and the UEFA Cup, and as you say, James, Cup Winners' Cup was the second.
Yeah, I remember it with a lot of prestige, but people seem to think of it as if it was like this tin pot.
And if you won it, you got to become the Cup Winners' Cup Winners. Which is, you've got to be happy with that. Yeah. Or the Cup Winners Squared.
So why
enjoy
did they
that repetition, fans.
Why didn't they get rid of the Fairs Cup then?
Well, the Fairs Cup became the UEFA.
That moulded into that motion to UEFA.
They don't know what they're doing at the top, James, let's be honest. Which is why we've come in.
Yeah.
Not really, James. But you know. Interestingly enough, now you see, I love that, a straight knockout competition.
Mm.
No club ever successfully defended the Cup Winners' Cup. Yeah. Different winner in 39 years.
That's brilliant.
But there were a lot of clubs that had the chance.
There was a couple of close ones. Arsenal in the mid 90s is a real obvious example.
Did they lose to Parma or did they beat?
No, they beat Parma and lost to Real
Madrid.
That's it. Zaragoza. Oh, that was Naeem, wasn't it?
Mm. And then Naeem, obviously. And I think.
Paris
Belgian side
as well.
Yeah, they came close. And I think, was it Anderlecht in the 70s?
Okay.
They won. One, then they got to the final, they lost, and then they won it again. So they were quite, you know, successful.
I love the fact that, you know, in a way it would make the FA Cup keep going. Because, you know, you win a knockout tournament, and then you've got another one. Knockout the whole way through.
But also, though, you know, people talk about fixture congestion and all. Well, if you don't fancy the Cup Winners' Cup, then you can go out the first.
Yeah.
You have an opportunity.
Is it fair to say that Jimbo's point is valid because the FA Cup is one of the biggest contributors to devaluing the FA Cup?
Sure,
Because people don't.
Well, you're guaranteed European football.
Yeah, and you don't see the Europa League or the UEFA Cup as it was as a big enough prize.
Well, Millwall got into Europe. I mean, it wasn't Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah, not for about 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, it made for attacking football, didn't it? Because, you know, even when it was two legged, it was like, this is it. I remember Arsenal beat Standard Liège 7-0. In the George Graham era. Like, Eddie McGoldrick scored in that game. It's just...
Yeah, that wasn't when Arsenal were known for scoring lots of goals.
No, that was a couple of weeks' worth of goals there.
Yeah, exactly. The next five league games were 0-0.
Yeah, you just quote her up in that round. From 1972 onwards, the winner of the tournament would play the winner of the European Cup, later the Champions League, in the UEFA Super Cup.
Class.
You know, and see, again, because it was, in recent years, it's been the UEFA Cup versus Champions League, but it wasn't. It was the Cup Winners' Cup was, again, it was given more prestige than the UEFA Cup. But it's funny, when it first came about, the Cup Winners' Cup, it wasn't really that, a lot of the Europe's top nations weren't really that interested in it.
British teams especially were very sceptical of European competition.
Well, actually... It was the England in England and Scotland. The domestic cup is very prestigious.
Mm.
So those kind of England and Scotland, I think, quite like the idea. And in the first season of the Cup Winners' Cup, there was only just 10 clubs in it. But by 1968, all the UEFA members nations had domestic cup competitions due to the success of the Cup Winners' Cup, which is one of the reasons. As I say, by the late 60s, the Cup Winners' Cup was really on the map. And as you say, James, it showcased a lot of attacking and entertaining football because you really can go hell for leather.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's none of this, like, you know, we'll rest some players. You don't have any of that.
No,
you know? Unless you've got a 7-0 win in the first leg, you know what I mean? You're not going to rest them.
Exactly, yeah. And the most successful team in the history of the tournament?
Barcelona.
Ajax.
It was Barcelona.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, four wins. But actually, English sides have won the cup more times than any other country with 8 wins. And with the biggest number of different teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Chelsea, Arsenal, Everton, Man City, Manchester United, Spurs and West Ham when they were captained by Bobby Moore. And Scotland have two winners, Rangers and Alex Ferguson's Aberdeen.
That's incredible, isn't it? You forget he did stuff before Man United.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, he was superb.
And he did it well. Yeah.
Managed
it
Scotland well. At one point, didn't he? Yeah. Which is mental.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and Spurs became the first British side to win a European trophy, which was the Cup Winners' Cup. And they beat the holders Atletico Madrid in the final, 5-1, which is one of the largest margins of victory in a one-match European final. Up there, I was up there with Madrid Eintracht fan.
That was 6-3. 7-3, sorry, yeah. Eat that up, fact fans. Stat fans.
A fact sandwich.
That 7-3 was Di Stefano and
those. All those, yeah. Yeah. Rangers in 1972, they won. They beat Dynamo Moscow in the final, I think it was. Pretty sure it was. En route, they beat Bayern Munich with Franz Beckenbauer in the side. And they got to the final, obviously, in 61 and 67, and this was at the Nou Camp. They won 3-2, and there was a massive pitch invasion. And as a result, Rangers were given the trophy in the dressing room afterwards. And they were forbidden by UEFA from defending their Cup Winners' Cup the following season. Can you imagine being presented the trophy in the dressing room?
Well, and UEFA kicked him out of it. That's rubbish.
The next year, yeah, because of the fans.
Cursed.
You know. Yeah. And then a year later, when Milan beat Leeds United 1-0, there was big suggestions.
Oh, yeah.
That the referee... Yeah.
There's actually a Leeds councillor still now campaigning to get the guy to admit he cheated.
Is that right?
Get the ref cheated? Because they got nothing in the second half.
Norman Hunter got sent off for Leeds.
Without being too libelous, I mean, that was... That was sort of the norm. I mean, Brian Clough, as we mentioned before, Brian Clough had a lot of issues with Italian teams and refs and sort of stuff in Europe.
But, Norman Hunter was sent off for Leeds. And
Norman Hunter wouldn't go in hard.
Well, you know, not in Europe. No. The fans were just going mental. And after the game, the Milan players, I think they were throwing things at the Milan players, so they didn't do a lap of honour. And instead, for the first time, maybe even the last time, off the top of my head, in footballing history, the losing side did a lap of honour around the pitch.
John Pansil. Yeah.
With Leeds receiving, getting all the applause from the local sets of fans.
All right.
Just great stuff.
Yeah.
When
I think of the Cup Winners' Cup, I just think of really, really dramatic, emotional evening games during the week.
Yeah.
It was class. It was absolute class. Yeah. If you're too young to remember it, it's a real, real shame because it was superb stuff.
But it's weird talking about it now as if to say, oh, were you old enough? I mean,
Is it a fair point to say that you didn't have as many European games then? So they were much more special. The Champions League did exist for a time when the Cup Winners' Cup existed. But it was nowhere near as extensive.
Of course, yeah.
But they also, it was an introduction to teams sort of like Parma when they played Arsenal. They had Gianfranco Zola, Thomas Brolin and Faustino Asprilla in that side. That was a great side, and you wouldn't be aware of them otherwise.
Mm. Yeah, totally. United won the competition in 91, and they were the first English side to win a European trophy since the Heysel disaster and the five-year ban from English clubs from European competitions, you know.
Actually, didn't Everton win it the year before that happened and then subsequently get banned because of something that happened in a Liverpool game? That must have been annoying.
Alex
Ferguson became one of two managers, Johan Cruyff included, to win the Cup Winners' Cup with two different clubs.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
And then, like we said, Sven-Göran Eriksson's Lazio won the last competition. And if you remember that, I actually watched that game on YouTube today just to refresh the old memory.
Yeah.
And Christian Vieri, lovely header to open the scoring.
He was some player.
Yeah, Danny equalised. And then Pavel Nedved scored a lovely one.
Was that Portuguese star Danny? I remember him.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
He had to be referred to as Portuguese star Danny. If it's the same one I'm thinking of,
the West Ham one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Forever young.
He had lovely hair.
Yeah. Didn't Harry Redknapp say I didn't know whether to play him or shag him?
Yeah, I remember that.
Off the record.
I think they're the same player. I mean, this could be a terrible research error.
Well, someone will email in, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Either way.
We've got to get one in for this.
And we love them for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely love them for that. And so, of course, into the late 90s, as we say, the expansion of the Champions League, making more than one team from all the highest ranked countries and all. The Cup Winners' Cup started to become a little bit inferior and the focus was heavily on the Champions League. UEFA Cup managed to survive, I think. But
it's because it just became like an inconvenience, is it?
Yeah, it's because you would have more than just the Champions going through to the European Cup,
stupid,
wasn't it?
So we all know. I mean, it will never change because of the money and stuff, and that's obviously going to be the case. But you shouldn't have four teams from England going into the Champions League. It should be the winner of the league wins, it goes to the Champions League. The next two go into UEFA, and the Cup winners go into the Cup Winners' Cup. Bring it back.
Well, apparently, a lot of
Really enthusiastic about that.
A lot of sort of European countries didn't even have a cup, and once the European Cup Winners' Cup started,
well,
they were
saying,
like, "Oh, this is interesting." And club competitions 60s. Throughout Europe have actually happened because of this competition.
Again, another problem was because the team who won the cup, sometimes they finished sort of third and fourth or whatever in their leagues, they would not enter the Cup Winners' Cup, they'd enter the Champions League.
Well, that's obviously why it was never defended, because if you're a really good team the following season, you wouldn't be in it.
Yeah, and it just came a bit sort of second. It almost came a bit like the League Cup in this country.
Yeah.
People think, oh, do we have to have that?
It's a shame.
It is a shame. So, yeah, the 1998-1999 tournament, which was won by Lazio, that was the last one. The trophy was awarded to Barcelona permanently because they were the most successful club, although Lazio kicked up a bit of a fuss because they were the last winners.
I thought you were going to say because they were the most sexy.
Yeah.
That as well.
Yeah, that was also
taken
into account.
Well, the football ramble will be given the trophy. Lazio weren't too happy about that, but... yeah, it's a shame. Massive shame. I just wish it would come back, but I don't think it will.
But at least it's got a lasting legacy. One, the cup competitions it spawned, as you guys rightly said. And two, it's in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. So, yeah.
It is in the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. And I'd like to quote, finish with a quote from Luke Moore. Bring it back.
In you come. Who's wheeling this one in?
Yeah.
CWP.
It's got a big cup.
It was big, actually, wasn't it? It was a really big cup.
Yeah, they're all big.
Enjoy that.
When you get into Europe, they're all big.
Yeah.
Yeah, the UEFA Cup's tiny, isn't it?
No, UEFA Cup.
It's massive.
UEFA Cup's huge, man.
The Fairs Cup was only small.
Stop calling it the Fairs Cup.
The old Fairs Cup was only very small.
Yeah, but the UEFA Cup's been in since like the 70s.
The biggest cup.
When Newcastle won the Fairs Cup. Newcastle won the Fairs Cup. They didn't win the
biggest cup in world sport has got to be the Stanley Cup, the NHL one. Have you seen that?
No.
That is about 6 foot tall. It's literally 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
Talking about that. We're talking about the Cup Winners' Cup.
I don't even know why I said that. What other cups have we lost along the way? Do you reckon? We're quite interested to see how many different names of cups who we were involved in it.
The Anglo-Italians, obviously.
Yeah,
Scalp.
The Anglo-Italian was. I'll tell you what. I'm not being funny. Well, I had some good memories of the Anglo-Italian Cup.
Yeah.
Don't front apart. Listen. Imagine right in the early 90s or the mid-90s when Pompey were utterly shit. Actually being able to watch England Pompey playing against like an Italian team at Fratton Park. It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah, I can remember when I used to collect the old programmes. Those Anglo-Italian programmes, although they were effectively glorified friendlies, those programmes, I can remember seeing Peruzzi play in goal against Pompey.
You know, Torino.
You'd never see any of that normally. Yeah. It was brilliant.
But it'd be like Brescia and
Foggia.
And also, obviously, we're not talking about like the Second World War, so it wasn't like. but you just didn't have the exposure, you didn't have the internet or any of that, so you would never
but
see
that. That is it, it's not that long ago.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, the email address is podcast@thefootballramble.com, and the website is www.thefootballramble.com. Pete, say goodbye, damn you.
Goodbye, damn you.
James, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
And Luke, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
We're all off to win the Cup Winners' Cup.
Intriguing stuff. We shall go surfing, shall we? Surfing, that is.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.